Welcome to the second episode of Polygos, the official podcast of the Polydon Civilization site. I'm one of your hosts, Wouter Snijders, known as Locutus on the forums. I'm here with Dan.
Greetings.
Marky.
Salutations.
And Imran.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
Have you been looking at the ratings for the episode?
What
ratings? I haven't been many, put it.
I think you were gave a 10, and that was about it.
No, there are like 5 votes there right now.
Wow.
I'm one of the 10.
Yeah.
There have been 6 whole votes.
Yay.
Wow.
2 sixes, 2 eights, 2 tens. So that basically averages out to 8.
So I guess that means those who voted 6 and those who voted 10, including me, don't count.
Sorry.
No, your vote doesn't count to begin with.
Have you guys voted yet?
No.
Not going to vote on my own podcast.
It's
I'm biased.
Your podcast? Aren't we possessive?
Well, it's better than having it be Dan's podcast, huh? Well, I know, we got to distinguish between us because Ciro thought that me and Dan were
the
sounded too similar. Dan.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Dan, just say a boot and a lot more.
And so you just stick your foot in your mouth there, Imran, and we'll call it even. I know what we can do. Let's wear a name tag. Oh, no, wait.
It's not visual.
In the news, 50 greatest games of all times, Civ on Steam, Dale's latest projects, the upcoming Warlord patch, and the release of Chronicles. In the modcast, we talk about if Canada should be a Civ, we should have a new unit upgrade system, what the benefits are of a specialist-based economy in Civilization 4. And if Apolloton is in decline, we also have the second part of our interview with Dale, as well as a completely new section, the Time Machine, a feature in which we look back at events that happened in the past. This week we talk about the release of the Cult Power Source Code 3 years ago. Over to Dan for the news.
Sid Meier's Civilization 2 has been declared one of the 50 greatest video games of all time, in a book titled appropriately, Game On From Pong to Oblivion, the 50 greatest video games of all time, that was released earlier this week. Written by 3 British game journalists with 30 years experience between them, their aim was to write a book which would appeal to a general audience, not necessarily gamers, and give a complete overview of the history of video games in all its forms and formats. Civilization 2 is the only Sid Meier title on the list, and in fact together with the original Command & Conquer appears to be the only strategy game.
Well, does anyone have the book?
No, nope. I don't have the book.
No, but there's a list on the link for it. There's a list on there.
Yes, this book was released on October 23rd, and the book is not listed on BarnesandNoble.com. It's not listed on Amazon.ca. It's not listed on Chapters. In the story, it actually has a link to the book on Amazon.com. Guess what? It's not available.
Well, it is on Amazon.uk.
Not even a week ago. But you can get it from Amazon UK, where there is a link to it, and it's 40% off the £15 cover price. So I guess you could get it there.
Yeah, and have it shipped over.
Exactly.
Yeah, that would take back the 40% discount.
And you see the part in the introduction where it says, deciding on the 50 greatest games of all time is as simple as picking the 50 greatest experiences ever, like trying to decide if tasting a strawberry is better or worse than skydiving. Wow, that sounds like an analogy I might put together. I don't know.
You can combine both of them.
Well, yes. I guess we need to presume that the co-authors have tried it, so have you tried tasting a strawberry while skydiving?
Exactly.
You should write a book about that.
Now, I wonder if there was any ranking, or they just kind of threw them all to...
I don't think there was a ranking, at least not on the actual website.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because, you know, we should be up there. We should be number one.
Yes, Polycast should be number one. Oh, no,
oh,
no, what is it?
Yeah, I mean, most lists I've seen, you know, they actually have a ranking. You know, Civ 2 is usually in the top 5, they seem loath to actually put it at number one for some reason, but I've seen it in, you know, second place, third place a bunch of times. With, you know, the flavor
again,
of the month is number one.
GameSpot had a top 100 of greatest games last week or so, and Civ wasn't in that at all.
Really?
I'm surprised by that, actually.
What?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. We need to have our forum members write articles or write emails to GameSpot.
Yeah. Angry PM to GameSpot.
And it was a people's choice thing, too, so it was based on a vote.
Stupid people.
Yeah.
This is why we don't have democracy. Oh, wait, we do. Oops.
Well, I don't know. Maybe there's actually a ranking in the book, but they didn't list it on the website because they actually want someone to buy the book.
Yeah, it's kind of hard, though. If you can find the book, you can see our rankings.
And, yeah, there's also a comment about, you know, that many great games we love didn't quite make it. And then the publisher will be setting up a website for gamers to argue amongst themselves and possibly with the book's authors. So if you visit greatestgames.co.uk and you click on the discussion page, it says, come back soon to find out how you can have your say, followed by a picture of a cute monkey. Well, I think we've always wanted a monkey, but that's kind of beside the point, right?
Well,
I mean,
a cute monkey,
maybe not the point at all. Yeah, it's a cute monkey, but I don't know. Wouldn't you launch the discussion section at the same time you release the book? I don't know. Kind of makes some kind of sense, doesn't it?
Except that the book
maybe that's
is
why it's not available.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure it's properly released yet.
The list itself, though, from when where I have it linked on Next Gen, it's a pretty good list. I mean, it hits all over the place in there. I don't know. There's not a lot in there I couldn't.
There's very little strategy games in it. Only Civ 2 and the original Command & Conquer. I mean, no Rise of Nations, no Age of Empires, no...
That's got to be
I don't know, you name
it.
Yeah, but only two on a list of 50.
There's
an awful lot of first-person shooters in those types of games, so there's a little bit of a bias there.
I started thinking, you know, maybe they've got a cutoff date that they were looking at the titles for, so I was trying to figure that out, so I thought, okay, maybe Civ 4 hasn't been out long enough, Rise of Nations hasn't been out long enough.
No, they've got Warcraft on there, so...
No, they got Madden 2007.
NFL 07, yeah, released in August of this year, so that can't be it. So, okay. What up, homies?
I
have Oblivion on there.
Oblivion being, see, I would actually say Morrowind instead of Oblivion, but that's just me. I'm not hating on Oblivion. I like it too, but Morrowind was more something.
Send all hate mail to Mackie.
Oblivion fanboys, please.
That's
know
a new one.
Then this comment about, for such a massive entertainment industry, it's ridiculous that there isn't a straightforward and uncomplicated celebration of games.
Huh?
Let's see. Massive industry celebration of games. That's going to be straightforward and uncomplicated, is it? Okay.
We don't have an Oscars, is guess what they're saying.
We have a BAFTA.
I'm still stuck in my throat. Oh, and then on the Next Gen report, where one of the co-authors, David McCarthy, says, you know, if you don't want to ruin your Christmas stocking surprise, then don't click on page 2 to see our top 50 index. Don't worry, it's not going to ruin any surprise for me. Just click.
Yeah, it's almost like they think that this is the only top 50 game list in history or something.
Yeah.
They think so highly of themselves.
Not like a GameSpot list was posted in the same week.
Not like GameSpot doesn't post a list every week.
Indeed. Two K Games, publisher of Civilization IV and Valve, have announced that they have reached an agreement to distribute a number of 2K's games on Valve's online distribution platform Steam. Among these games are the Firaxis products Civilization 3, Civilization 4, and Pirates. Steam is a somewhat controversial online distribution system for PC games and digital entertainment that, with its more than 10 million users around the world, is the largest system of its kind.
Oh, Steam.
Are people steamed over Steam?
Yes.
Someone had to say it. Why not me?
You're a master of the bad puns and jokes.
Yeah, and I already made the steam power joke, so...
Steam.
In the news item itself. I was channeling Dan for a moment.
I somewhat forget. Now, what was the main issue over Steam with Half-Life 2? I remember there was some controversy, but forget exactly what it was. Any of you know?
Link for that to Wikipedia? And the...
There is a link, indeed.
The Wikipedia. We all know
that. I would be the first to agree with you, but...
Bolton's on Wikipedia, so it can't be all bad.
Yeah, we lied about that, too, though.
Have you read that?
Well, sure, you read Bolton's entry. It takes, like, 20 seconds.
Dan Q is so dreamy. What? Well, it is kind of short.
The article on Wikipedia kind of summarizes the criticisms, and kind of a top five here. The first one was this convenience concern about how you need to log in and validate with Steam Online at least once in order to play any Steam game. I think that's inconvenient, but I'm not so sure why that is a privacy concern, unlike the other privacy concern that's mentioned in the Wikipedia article where it talks about collecting and reporting anonymous and non-identifying metrics, blah, 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 blah. But some non-identifying data has been known to be collected without any indication, and nobody really knows if there's other data being collected, and nobody knows what that's about either. So, to me, kind of those two kind of lumped together. It's kind of like a mild to moderate privacy concern, to me, with collection of data. And when you're not upfront about it, it kind of also casts a shadow of... Why weren't you upfront about that, especially if it's not identifying? Why would you be so concerned not to say something about it?
Yeah, I think that's not even really a huge concern. I think in the past, the biggest concern was that Steam, you had to log in every time you wanted to play, and that's a bit of a problem, especially for people who are, say, on dial-up or who pay for their bandwidth. I say, yeah, the privacy, yeah, it is a little bit of a concern.
I don't pay the internet. How dare you, sir?
Hey, some people are metered by the hour. But, yeah, I have some people on another board I go to. A bunch of people bought, I'm going to get the title wrong, but Dark Messiah, my magic thing, and the people who downloaded off Steam have had so many problems, it's not funny, because they're having things like really extended loading times, because I guess Steam it keeps checking to validate it all the time. You know, where the people who bought the brick-and-mortar, the retail version of the brick-and-mortar store have had no problems, you know, except for having to patch it the one time, and that's it. So,
well,
for something that's supposed to be a lot more convenient, it's not.
Well, there is always the option of the brick-and-mortar store, so, I mean, I guess you know the risks when you go into it if you're going to buy it online.
Yeah, as long as it's an option, I don't have too much of a problem with it, but I really don't want to see this become the only distribution channel. I don't really see that happening either, especially not for what is mostly an SP game.
Yeah, and they're talking about wanting to do episodic content, and if they try to move that to where all they're doing is that, and then you don't have the option, well, what are the people on dial-up and or people that don't have a stable connection going to do?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they actually do exist out there.
Guess we're not on broadband.
And the possibility of system failure, you know, how will Steam products be activated if Steam is no longer available? And I guess Valve CEO, I think that's his title, Gabe Newell, am I pronouncing that properly? I'm assuming so. Talks about that, you know, game files can be backed up by gamers and that they've disabled authentication. It works. But he does say in this quotation on Wikipedia that they would presumably disable authentication. So I don't know why he said presumably. Does he not have control over that? But besides that, there's also, I see, resale of games and forced auto-updating. Like, with the forced auto-updating, auto-update it. You know, well, as we talked about the inconvenience for dial-up users, there's another inconvenience. That's another important consideration. I mean, but even more so than that, you use brute force, where a user must limit, or rather wait for the update process to finish before being able to play again. But then once you apply an update, you cannot roll back, which is even, of course, more problematic. Now, I don't know about you guys, but generally I'm not one to download a software update for games or otherwise in at least the first few days after its release, just in case, you know, we take one step forward and two steps back.
Known to happen now and again.
Yep.
Or you prefer the unpatched version, which is, and I was saying earlier about mods. There's a lot of mods that depend on an earlier version of the game, and there's so many games that are being expanded with modding these days.
Yep.
If you're running all these mods, it's going to completely ruin your game, basically.
Well, things like PBM, democracy games, all those things sometimes, if a patch requires you to have a new save game format, all those things are ruined. So yeah, that's not really a great idea.
So I suppose the best advice for anyone looking to use to get Civ 3, Civ 4 from Steam or any other product is, you know, unfortunately, buyer-aware and buyer-acceptance. Get yourself informed, make an informed decision, and then accept the pros and cons of that decision. It's not fair. Life isn't fair, but I guess that's kind of the way you have to go with this.
Yeah, and, you know, get the collector's edition, too. You can get some trinkets and things like that, and that will prevent you from having to deal with all this pain if you think that there will be.
Hey, there's actually a reason for them to buy Civilization Chronicles.
Oh, nice segue.
I'm getting good at this. Alt-Civ's programmer Dale is back and with a vengeance. Covertly announced during the premiere of Polycast, he's revived his old project empires by adding an exclamation mark to the title, Sid Meier Style, talk about ambitious, and plans to reinvent the game on a 3D engine with some major gameplay changes. He posted the design document in Alt-Civ forums a few days ago and is looking for feedback.
I mean, it sounds like a very interesting setup there. I mean, you know, he did refer a little bit, I guess, in the interview to some sort of game that, I mean, I guess it's a interesting time period and not one. I don't know if it's been much covered by other strategy games, but it sounds...
I don't know. Well, there's a little game called Medieval Total War.
Yeah, but that's a...
You
that's
might have
different.
Heard of it. Yeah, of course it's different. And I have read actually the document. It's really a mix between all the games, big strategy games we had so far, Civilization, Colonization, Europa Universalis, Age of Empires, Imperialism, Rise and Fall of Civilizations. So there's really a lot of all those games in there, and of course some original ideas.
But besides all that, I mean, not much of anything.
Well, that's about it.
What a lightweight.
Yeah. Amateur.
Translation, Dan wishes he could do something this good. He's just jealous.
Oh, he revealed his insecurities for all of the Paladin to know.
You mean they didn't know already?
Shh.
And someone tell Mackie that I don't appreciate that.
Oh no, he's put me on ignore.
Okay. So good job, Dale. And your voice did not sound bad on that last interview.
We are always our harshest.
I've heard voice.
Yeah, me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was thinking of somebody else.
Oh, and unfortunately, we have a slight change in the lineup of co-hosts. Mackie was originally on my ignore list, and now she's banned. So I guess I'm just going to accidentally click a button and hang up on you. Oh, sorry about that.
Make sure you don't hit the button to stop the Audacity taping.
Yeah.
Again.
What's that? Oh, no, I'm losing one or two.
Look, this is going to be just like the other thing, the ACR.
One hour of Dan talking to himself.
Do you like that?
It's still a design document, and he needs feedback, so
help him
people
out.
Go there and discuss.
Go where? Need to help us out, you know.
Okay, that's apolitan.net/forums and then to the alternative SIFs forum.
I like being difficult.
Yes, we know. Alex Mansaris, designer at Civilization IV at Firaxis Games, has announced in our forums that a patch for the Civ 4 expansion is almost ready to be released and has in the meantime posted a detailed change log in our forums.
Bunch of items they fixed and changed up. Seems like they've been really working hard here.
Yeah, Alex commented that, you know, it's taking longer to release than expected, but you need to get everything in it that you need to get in it, want to get in it, and need and want to make sure it works as intended. No point in rushing it. Just take the extra time that you need.
Mm-hmm.
We're all patient.
And I like that they've been paying attention in the forums, and they saw all the AI tweaks that Blake made, and they incorporated it as part of the official patch.
See, they actually read us.
Yes.
So watch what you say.
So, Blake, I guess you should be getting a nice check in the mail pretty soon. If you don't, you need to do something.
Whine and complain on the forums.
That's like everybody else. It'd just be like everybody else.
Yes, maybe he can sue and the next version could be called Blake Civilization 5. Well, I was just looking through the fixes. This is quite a nice
Yeah, same here.
Nice little list there.
Well?
Well, I was being...
There's nothing overly spectacular. It's all very small things for the most part. Yeah, true, but there have been bigger patches. I mean, the last Regulus of 4 patch was huge.
True, but, you know, they're working on all those fixes for the next expansion.
That is true.
Yeah, but it's good that they're still paying attention to it even after it's been released, and when the broader base of players plays it and says, hey, this needs to do like this, that they're tweaking all these little things.
Yeah, that is true. No, I mean, many big changes are good. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but nothing really that you say, wow, this is great. I've been waiting for this for months.
And the interesting thing is, with Civil Service now requiring mathematics, it really puts...
There goes the slingshot.
Really puts a crank in that one.
My slingshot's been nerfed. What are you people, Blizzard?
There are a lot of interesting little tweaks, though. I mean, it might have some big effects, all of them in conjunction with each other. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, that's the big one. It's a combination of all of these, but can't really comment on that if you haven't played it.
True. But I guess the CS slingshot, I guess, is really going to have an impact.
That is a big one, yeah.
Yeah, I think somebody else, it may have been in that thread or a different thread, was saying that this is going to get some people to have to play a difficulty lower than they have been. Because this has been sort of, I guess, a little bit of a crutch for people who are having trouble in higher difficulty levels, and now it's like, uh-oh, now what?
But how do you play below the lowest difficulty level?
Well, we're talking about people other than Dan.
Oh, okay. Dan has ignored all of us.
Just ignoring all of us.
Dan, he's now put ball in the gas.
He's doing his own one. He took his ball and went home.
Civilization Chronicles is available in stores in North America now. This product was announced last month and includes all four incarnations of the Civilization series and most of its expansion packs, as well as a number of extras, such as a card game designed by Soren Johnson, the 96-page book on the history of Civilization, a video DVD, and more.
Now in stores. Anyone seen it?
Can't say that I have.
Well, does seeing it on your computer screen count?
Yeah. I know you don't.
The past couple of weeks.
I know you don't go anywhere, Dan, but no.
You're not going to be going anywhere either if you keep going.
I don't know how well it's going to sell. I mean, I'd figure that everyone that was interested in Civ would, like, you know, would have purchased it when it came out, but I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
You know.
But every new version of it's gotten new people to the series. There are probably people out there playing Civ 4 that have never played 3 or 2 or any of the others.
Mm. But then, of course, you know, we all like to say, you know, it's not about the graphics, it's about the gameplay. But when you have Civ 4 and you have the graphics of that, and then you put in, say, Civ 2, you're like, wait a second, what is this?
So wait till I put in Civ 1.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a relic from the Dark Ages.
It's in a nice package, though, from what I've seen online.
Yep. I think, actually, the real collectors will probably still want to have it, indeed, for the extras, mostly, or just to get their collection complete, because they have every game so far. And since this thing probably doesn't really cost anything to make, only to get Sora into a designer card game. you don't have to sell all that many copies to make a profit on this.
Mm.
But that's probably why they make these things.
But that means more development money so they can keep making really good games.
Yep.
So Bicef Chronicles for X can make better games?
There you go. You can look at the 96-page book for behind the scenes of Civ series. And I mean, I was impressed that they had, you know, included tech tree posters for all the games.
Yeah, that's kind of nice.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
Only too bad there aren't any manuals that would have made it a really nice package. I guess you can't have it all.
They can't think of everything.
Maybe they have
one of the few games.
I said maybe they have PDF manuals.
Yeah, but that's not the same. Civ 1 and Civ 2 are really good manuals.
Oh, that's true.
I still have mine somewhere around here.
I lost mine for Civ 2, but Civ 1 is probably still around somewhere.
Yep, I've got mine. And if you do your community duty, you will visit Civilization4.net and buy Chronicles through a Poulton.
Huh.
Because, as you know, my retirement funds, I'm kind of sad.
That's from all that spending on prom, Dan.
Yeah, we saw the bandwidth bill. We know who's been after it, and it wasn't legit this time.
I haven't had the opportunity to play Gal Civ 2 in a long, long time. Anyone here played Gal Civ 2 recently?
No.
We don't want people to think that this is a Civ-only podcast. It's Polycast for a Poulton. Why don't we talk about Gal Civ 2 as much? Because, well,
we don't play.
But you can help. If anyone listening is a regular Gal Civ 2 player and would be willing and able to provide us with a verbal, bi-weekly, or even monthly report on the community, get in touch with us. You can call into the show, leave a message, say how great I am. That's required.
Oh, great.
With your report, and we'll use that on the air. Sound like fun and a plan? Then do it yesterday already. What are you waiting for? You lazy or what?
Oh, that's great. Now we have a backup to replace us with. Don't think we don't know what you're doing, Dan.
Quit recruiting.
Only a correspondent, not as a host. Okay.
Oh, I don't know. I can't think of one host to replace.
That's very kind of you, Wouter, but I think we'll keep you.
Where are we going to publish Polycast?
our new host, Marcos.
If you have any news for us, any news tips, contact us with news tips.
Head on over to apolton.net/about, look for contact us, or news at apolton.net also works.
And you can also PM.
Yes, you can. Milcutis, DanQ, Snoopy369, and Illuminatus, one of us four, we'll get that up there.
Okay, welcome to this week's Modcast, in which we discuss hot issues in the forums.
The question was, by Will9 on our Civ4 general forums, should Canada be in? And if I view the results real quick of the poll he posted, 65.28% say no, 12.50% say yes, and 22.22% say maybe when Canada has the highest banana production. I would say no. Sorry, Dan.
Fat no.
I can't even think of a scenario you could use Canada in other than something like one of
the War of 1812.
Well, I was thinking like the one I think somebody did for Civ 3 where the U.S. all split up and never been fighting over North America or something, but... Is a main Civ? Probably.
Yes,
not.
I mean, most of the time, they'd be vassals of Britain, really, anyway, as their colony.
Of the U.S.
Yes, well, yeah, now.
You might be surprised by my answer. Should Canada be in Civ, as a built-in Civ? No. If there are Canadians out there who want it to be included as a Civ, change the code, as Verdrago already noted. So, that is not what has caused me to write a few notes on this one, the question, but anybody notice how the conversation started off as should Canada be in Civ, and it kind of branched out into just about defining Canada as a nation, period, or how nations define themselves on their own or relation to one another, kind of went a little off topic. Kind of losing the Civ connection there. But
it's for the plus ones. It's all for the plus ones.
Well, I'm just going to quickly run down some of the comments about why Canada should not be in Civ. And I think I agree with no, the end result is the same, no, but how we're getting there. I mean, some of these comments, my goodness sakes. I can't really name a single important historic incident that Canada as one of the major players. How about the World Wars, more the Second World War, where Canada's role was more independent from Britain, and the Suez Crisis? Don't know what I'm talking about, who posted that? Look it up. Moving on.
You can just hear the anger in his voice. Anger.
I don't get angry. I get even.
Dad, anger leads to fear. Fear leads to the dark side. Or is that the other way around?
Who said he isn't already on the dark side?
That's true. Okay, move on then. Move on.
Luke, I am your owner. There we go. All right. Number two, the really interesting thing is that they seem to be the only nation in the world that can say this. Every other nation I can think of has played important roles in major historic events.
Zimbabwe?
How many nations are we thinking about?
Well, Zimbabwe has...
I can think of a few.
Zimbabwe has Mugabe.
Luxembourg.
And Mugabe's a wacko.
Wow. Yeah.
That comment, I was just kind of roll eyes, okay.
I will say, Canada should only be incentive if Dan is the leader head.
You'd rather be leading of the Apollon nation.
Yeah, you know, other nations that should be included in Civ that aren't.
One hearing really weird noises?
No. No. I'm not. You have voices inside your head telling you you need to be looking up something else right now?
Maybe.
The prawn is popping up. That's what it is.
Okay.
Well, we need a pop-up block.
Yeah.
Back to normal now. But
it seems interesting that you thought about that while we were talking about Canada. Don't see the connection, but hey, to each his own. As I was saying, nations that shouldn't be included in Civ but aren't, or at least in 4, where are the Babylonians? Where's
that's for the next. What that's happened? For the next expansion, I think. I think they're holding out, like, some big names for so the big expansions looks a little better. I mean, it could be really great, but, I mean, a lot of people focus on the new Civs. I mean, let's be honest.
No comment.
But, you know, if Canada was to be a built-in Civ, I like the comment about the unique unit being the Mountie, replacing cavalry. That's a no-brainer. But leaders? I appreciate the suggestion that I should be the leader head, Imran, but I don't think too many people are going to agree with that, and if they did, that's probably one of the first things that would be modded out.
Oh, come on, who else would they pick? Pierre Trudeau? There was an interesting, I guess, by this MR, Civ 4 General Forms, of whether units should upgrade over time. I guess he was saying, well, the first sentence that started this was, I think it's silly to have warriors around the year 2050. And he was suggesting perhaps an upgrade over time, knowing that, of course, you know, there are obsolete units in Civ, but it kind of makes no sense for loincloth warriors running around in the 21st century.
And you know what? He's right. How could the Civ, who has this unit in 2050, be so far behind in tech development or so cheap and lazy to upgrade? I mean,
exactly. If you still have warriors at that point, you're doing something wrong.
And as the Diem phrases at home, I'm pronouncing your form handle correctly. If not, call in and complain. Somebody call in. No profanity or hate mail, please. Okay. Do you think units get more modern automatically in the real world? No, they need to be upgraded as well for a lot of money. You know, doing what this is suggesting, I think, would eliminate an element of realism in the game that is both logical and practical to gameplay. I mean, what's not practical in Civ? The fact that you're the leader of a civilization for 4,000-some odd years, but you're not going to live that long? Okay, we recognize that we're stretching things a little bit here, but automatically upgrade in the real world? That would be awesome.
But don't you think the warrior unit, the guys that actually composed the unit, wouldn't have gone out and bought themselves their own better weapons, even if the government hadn't bought them?
Yeah, I mean, from a realism point of view, the people in Africa are no longer fighting with clubs and stones. They do have Kalashnikovs and stuff like that. But from a gameplay point of view, yeah, absolutely agree. You can't change that mechanism, really, without making it really complicated or clumsy. From a gameplay point of view, it just makes sense. Do your work, can't get everything for free.
Yeah, and this comment about perhaps we could have an incentive system for upgrading, isn't there an incentive already?
Yeah, don't get conquered.
Yeah, you know, like when upgrades become available, have a quick look around, whether Civ units are, and look at what type of units you have, and if you can benefit militarily from the upgrade, Consider your relation with those neighbors, the cost of the upgrade, and your treasury balance, and make a decision. What more incentive do you need not to get, as Imran says, you know, wiped off the map? Unless you like that.
Yeah.
Do you like getting defeated? Do you like that? Is that good for you? Okay. That's your issue,
I think
Dan.
We need to move on. Dan's getting too excited. And the last one, I actually pulled one from the off-topic forums because, well, I hang around in there, and if we counted plus ones in off-topic, I'd have, like, 40,000 posts. But,
Wait, people read off-topic? Since when? What? Nobody told me.
I've never seen you there.
I've never seen that.
It only carries the forums. But anyway, Oregon posted, is Apolliton in decline based on just the lack of posts as there used to be and lack of new people joining as there used to be, indicating that perhaps the place has lost a little bit of the sense of community it once had. Like you said, a lot of it is based on when a new game comes out. I mean, Civ 4 has been out for a while. I guess when it first, you know, came out, there was a lot of new blood that came into the forums, and a lot of new people joined, and a lot more posts. It was a little shot in the arm. You know, unfortunately with Warlords, you didn't have the same number of jump, but I think, you know, sometimes during lulls between games, you tend not to have as many people just kind of wander into a civilization forum.
You know what? It's not always about quantity of posts. It's about quality.
Do we have any better quality of posts?
Well, since you post in the off-topic forum, are you questioning the quality of your own posts? You are awfully harsh.
Well, of course I'm. I never said my own posts were any good.
Well, yeah, I mean, when a new game comes out, we have a sudden influx of newbies, whether they be newbies to the series or newbies to Apolliton, or both, and some stay and some don't, and I think we're just kind of in a quieter period, and of course, I mean, the summertime that just passed, as you know, terms of North America here, and Europe to a large extent. I mean, people are outside a lot, part of the real world that we were getting at before. Shh, Matthew, cover your ears. It's okay. Breathe. Saying Apolliton is in decline, that might be a bit strong. Perhaps a little hibernation.
There you go. I think it's safe to say, when Civilization 5 comes out or something like that, or, if they negotiate with EA for Smack 2, you'll have a ton of new people coming in and posting all around and just increasing our numbers, I guess. But I guess in a downtime, what do you expect?
Yeah, or when we introduce, the babe threads and the dude threads.
No, we're not allowed to anymore. You cut down on that, you bastards.
I know. Aha. Uh-huh. I just thought I'd remind you that we cut down on them.
Grr.
Welcome to the second part of our interview with Dale Kent, the Cult Part 2 and Civilization 4 modmaker, the AltCiv programmer, and the official Civilization 4 tester and scenario designer. We ask Dale what he thinks of Civilization 4, if he's happy with how it turned out, and what he thinks are the biggest improvements compared to Civ 3.
I think the game Civ 4 is a fantastic game. I do see a couple of little things which I wish changed, but overall, I see it as a huge jump over Civ 3. Like, for instance, we've got rid of that corruption model that was in Civ 3. That was horrendously bad for Civ 3, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And also, too, within Civ 4, as it was released out of the box, it actually uses every single component within the actual game that the human has access to. Unlike Civ 3, where until the Conquest expansion, the AI didn't even know how to use armies, which was a major downfall. It was a major benefit for the human player to walk around with an army, and the AI didn't know what to do with an invading army. Also, too, I think introducing religion into Civ 4 is a huge leap, because religion is responsible for a lot of events within history, and, in my opinion, just to leave it out of a game of you know, historical scope like Civ is, you know, it was just a travesty, but I'm glad they brought that one in. And also getting rid of population races that were in Civ 3, while it's been replaced by a broad culture model, which also encompasses a few other concepts as well, it was just, I just felt it was really good to get rid of the actual race issue that Civ 3 had.
Okay, well, the game takes a lot of elements from the Call to Power series. What elements are you most happy to see from Call to Power that are now in Civ 4? And is there anything you would like to see added that isn't currently in the
I'm glad to see that Civ 4 has taken a lot of the elements from Call to Power that I actually enjoyed, like, for instance, the feats, you know, circumnavigating the world, you know, being the first to go all the way around. Also, too, the user interface, I felt the Call to Power interface was actually better than the Civ 3 interface. Yeah, call me a heretic.
No, I agree with you there.
But I was glad to see that Civ 4 took a more control panel-looking interface than the, you know, the buttons of Civ 3. Yeah, the messaging system, I felt really familiar with that from Call to Power because the messages were just coming up on screen just like they did in Call to Power. I felt that was an added bonus for Civ 4. A couple of the things that I was disappointed not to see within Civ 4 was, of course, ranged bombarding of artillery's ability to bombard the next tile. I know it was in Civ 3 and it was taken out. Also stacked combat as well. That was the biggest bug for me, because in Civ, it's still running, you know, a 15-year-old concept such as one-on-one combat, and especially with the Call to Power series coming out with stacked combat and it being its one of its major features, I was a little disappointed that it wasn't taken on board. Another thing that I had wished was in Civ 4 was actually being able to pirate trade routes. That was, you know, a fantastic element of Call to Power, just being able to destroy a rival nation's trade routes using pirating vessels. And, you know, the consequences of diplomacy through that pirating as well. That's about it.
Okay.
So what did you have to do with Warlords? How do you think that one turned out?
My involvement in Warlords was just on a testing basis, because I was heavily involved with my own modding. I didn't want to get too involved with any scenarios within Warlords. I just concentrated on testing the actual core components, you know, especially with the changes around combat and, you know, the trebuchet and, you know, the new units that were added. You know, I just focused mainly on those within Warlords. As for how it turned out, I think it's a great expansion for Civ 4. My own personal opinion is that I would have liked to have seen a bit more core changes to the game. Like, yeah, scenarios are fun and, you know, you play them for a while, but it's the core game that makes the player come back time and time and time again. And I was just a little bit disappointed that we couldn't do more with it. Like, sure, Vassalage is a fantastic concept, and, you know, bringing the Great General on board just filled that gap, you know, completely. So now you've got the full range of great people to be able to build. But, yeah, I think we could have done a bit more with it. I don't know whether it was time that constricted it or, you know, whether it was just against the ideas of the actual designers of Warlords. But, yeah, I felt we could have done more.
So what kind of changes would you like to see in future expansions?
Interesting question. Everyone's got their own ideas of what they want in Civ. A couple of mine focus more on, you know, the epic side of it. And it may seem ironic to some people that the non-combat side of it, like, for instance, I'd like to see multi-party diplomacy, like being able to create, you know, for instance, three-nation alliances, or being able to make non-aggression pacts between a number of nations. I'd also like to see the rise and fall of empires more accurately depicted. Like, there is no nation in history that has just grown and grown and grown and grown and grown. They have always come to an end and fallen, basically. And, you know, in line with that, I'd like to see rebellions.
Sort of like in Civ 1, where you end up with a civil war if somebody got too big?
Not as limiting as those rebellions, because, like, if you captured the enemy's capital, it would just send them into a rebellion. You know, not on that sort of concept, but more... definitely a rebellious model. Come and see me in about 12 months. I might have written something out by then.
So if Seth contacted you and asked you to be the lead designer on Civ 5, hypothetically speaking, what would be your response and where would you take the game if you were given a
free reign? I would actually have to say, given the scope of Civ and the fact that it's now such an icon within the industry, that because it can't be changed too much, like radically, or it doesn't become Civ anymore, I would actually have to decline the offer from Civ, because I feel that it's too broad. Like, for instance, it's very hard to depict eras within Civ. Like, you know, when you've got 1,000 turns, how do you depict 6,000 years worth of history? You know, especially considering there were times in history where nothing happened for like 500 years, and then all of a sudden, like, the entire world would be turned upside down, shaken, and, you know, it's completely rearranged within like a space of 50 years. Like, for instance, the Mongol invasion of China and, you know, the Middle East,
yeah.
And, you know, just the impact that short span of the Mongol Empire had on the whole of Eurasia. And also, too, specifically, another one is the Age of Discovery, you know, a time of about 150 years that basically took the whole world from these isolated pockets of civilization to, you know, this globe-spanning nations that occurred just before the, you know, the imperialism era, like, especially with England. So I actually agree a bit with how Age of Empires has taken their line of games, in that each game focuses on one particular era. If I had free reign on Civ to be able to change it radically, I would probably break it up into a number of eras and maybe, you know, release each era as an add-on, you know, as a separate game itself, because there's just so much within each era that it could be a game in itself.
Yeah, that's like the Ancient Mediterranean mod that focuses mostly on that early era, and it's a huge thing.
Exactly. And like my own Age of Discovery mod just focuses completely on that era of colonization.
Okay, cool. Talking about that, what was your motivation for creating Age of Discovery?
I started doing Age of Discovery before Civ 4 was actually released. What I wanted to do was, because of the amount of effort that I'd put into shaping the world builder, you know, with a couple of other people as well, I wanted to put the whole world builder through its paces and just see what it could create. And so I started doing the Age of Discovery scenario back then. And then, you know, I was able to write the manual for the world builder as well at the same time while I was doing the Age of Discovery mod. So basically, the core of Age of Discovery is completely done in the world builder. Like, it just shows how powerful it can be if you learn how to use it properly. Yeah, so that was why I started the Age of Discovery, and I picked the colonization era because it's my second favorite era after World War II.
So how long did you work on that all in all, and how did you go about
making it? I spent about 6 months on the scenario as a whole. It was broken into two separate periods, though. Like, there was the end of last year when I spent about 4 months on it, and then, of course, there was the last 2 months that I spent on it this year just to clean it up, finish it, and package it and get it out to the community as a final. Sorry, what was the other half of the question?
Yeah, how do you think it turned out? It's also a good question. And how did you go about making it?
As I mentioned earlier, I did most of the core within the world builder itself. You know, like the actual map, city placements, all the buildings within the cities, the population, culture spread, even, you know, down to placing the units and, you know, manipulating the terrain to what it is now, placing all the resources and stuff. So that was all done within the world builder. But of course, like any full-blown scenario, you're going to have to get into the actual files themselves, the raw XML files. But basically just using Notepad and Excel, no XML spy for me. I just went through the files and made any changes that I wanted for the actual mod. And, you know, over quite a few iterations that I actually played as opposed to what was released, because there were three betas and then the final release for the actual mod, but I had a lot in between of iterations where I was playing it and just making minor modifications. Like, for instance, I had one point where the Arquebusier unit was able to kill musketmen almost every time, and, you know, that shouldn't happen.
Okay, so is there a lot of Python code in the mod? Or is
most people
XML?
Probably don't actually realize this, but there is really only one part, one patch of Python code within the actual mod, apart from the Dawn of Man screen, which has to be in Python. But the only part that I added myself was a colonization helper for the AI. And basically what it does is at random points during the first 100 years, it will just give the major nations a caravel and a settler and head it towards the Americas. Because what I found in early testing was that while the AI was really good at colonizing, it started it too late. And, of course, by then the human could control the best patch of America, and the AI was just starting to send settlers over. So what I did was I wrote this Python code to just help the AI along, because I found once it got a couple of cities in America, it would just grow and grow and grow from there, from its base there.
Hmm. Yeah, I was actually quite surprised to find that code, because it's you don't notice it when you're playing it. You really have to know it's there, so it's... very simple.
Exactly. It took me a long time to balance it.
Okay, so what was your motivation for making your combat mod?
The base motivation for creating the combat mod was the fact that stacked combat wasn't in Civ 4 and wasn't going to be. I remember some quite interesting discussions within the beta process. Between the whole team, where there'd be like anything up to 20 people involved in, you know, the discussion. And from there, I just basically said, look, if modding the game is the way you want to go, then we should be able to introduce new concepts like stacked combat. And I got the reply back that, yes, it would be possible. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And thus began Dale's Combat Mod. It started out basically as, the first part I wrote was the ranged bombardment, and it wasn't too different to the original, to how the original vanilla version's bombard works, where you move your artillery next to a city and then click the bombard icon. The one I wrote was, if you move next to a enemy unit, you could click on the bombard icon and it would automatically bombard it, which is quite different to how it is now in its final version, where you can actually target an enemy unit as opposed to being automatically selected. The second component I wrote was, of course, the stacked combat component, and I tried to model it on the call to power stacked combat model, but I made my own changes as well for what I see as making it a better model as well. The success of that is, of course, hotly debated among the community, but I'm quite happy how it turned out.
Okay, yeah. Are there more things in the mod, or is it only those two
changes? There's two other parts to the mod as well, and they came directly from user requests. One of them is the Mad Nukes system that I've put in there, which is opposed to the Lopez's Mad Nukes mod at Civ Fanatics. But what mine does is actually you can pre-target your nukes before you actually declare war on an enemy, which is very similar to how Call to Power 2 handled their nukes, mm-hmm. where you could target a nuke at an enemy city, and if that enemy launched a nuke at you, then that nuke would automatically be fired back at them. Sort of like the system that America and the USSR had during the Cold War, where all the nukes were... Basically, the first strike would be countered by this Mad Nuke system. And so what I did was I implemented that within the game. And also, from a direct user request, was missiles. And what I did was just wrote a simple little patch for the combat model so that if a unit had a particular missile flag within its unit's definition, then that unit would be destroyed during combat to simulate the missile hitting the unit.
Yeah, are you thinking about any other new projects or mods for Civ 4?
At the moment, no. I'm on a bit of a brain fry at the moment. Don't get me wrong, I do have ideas, but I'm just taking a break from the actual modding and scenario scene at the moment. I've got a few other things on the burner that are in the process, and I need to concentrate on them for a while before I can come back to Civ 4.
Would that be trying to break into the game industry? How's that going?
Yes, that is one of them. It's going well. I've been having a few interviews with game companies around Melbourne, and you know, I've been generating a lot of interest, you know, in the work that I've been doing. Like, for instance, you know, I'll be meeting Irrational, actually, next week. Yeah.
Interesting. Rational,
yes, Irrational Games. Another part of Take-Two. Same as Firaxis.
What kind of games do they make?
I believe they're working on BioShock right now, which is... It's a first-person thing, but it's supposed to have a really detailed storyline stuff. It's the same people, so the people out there who have played other first-person games, it's some of the people that work there are some of the same people that worked on System Shock, and I think some from Deus Ex even as well.
Exactly, yeah. And if you hang on a second, I'm loading their website, I can tell you.
Hey!
Yeah, I was looking as well.
I knew, just because I know them.
Oh, that's good. That's pretty
big
studio,
BioShock at
right?
E3, GameSpy Best of Show, IGN Best of Show, and GameSpot Best of Show.
Okay, well, that sounds very
also
promising.
Has, what, four? That's about it on their front page.
So, well prepared for the interview, then.
I've got another week for research.
Okay. That's good to know.
So if you succeed at getting a job at Irrational or someplace else, are we still going to see new mods and scenarios out of you?
I don't know at this point. I'll still be floating around Apollon, of course. You know, it's been my home for like the last 6 years. It would be hard to get out of. I think I've said a few times, I'm leaving, I'm over this, and, you know, ended up back a month later. But at this point...
Polyton, you can join anytime you want, but you can never leave.
Exactly. But at this point, I'd have to say no, I've got nothing new in the works for Civ 4. I may later on down the track, but yeah, at this point, no.
Okay, what are some of the other games that you have played, and do you mod
those
games
as well?
Well,
at the moment, on my PC that I play it every now and again, I've got Oblivion, SimCity 4, and I actually have written a few mods for SimCity 4, actually, a few buildings and what I call the Melbourne Urban Living Estate. So if anyone plays SimCity 4, go to simtropolis.com and download it and comment, yay.
Oh, Metropolis.
I know I'm not on their payroll. I enjoy the Breakaway games a lot, you know, like Rise of the Middle Kingdom and Pharaoh and and Zeus, you know, the City Builder series.
Yeah. Oh, are you excited about Caesar 4 coming out soon?
Yes.
That's what I wanted to ask as well.
One other game I've got is actually Wheel of Time. It's a first-person shooter based on Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time books. And basically it's when I'm fed up with the world and just want to go and shoot something.
Yeah. I know what you're feeling.
You can ask a question.
Oh, well, we were going to ask if you're excited about Civ 4. I mean, not Civ 4. Caesar 4.
Caesar 4.
Said yeah.
It's very hard to answer that question because I'm sure Braxis has probably got an ear listening at the moment, considering I was involved with SimCity Rome. But in a way, yes, I have been keeping in tabs with Caesar 4. Like, I've always enjoyed those city builder games, and I would like to see how Caesar 4 is going to turn out. And probably by the time this goes to air, it'll be released. As for whether I'll get it straight away, probably not. I'll probably wait a little bit and see how, like, the community reviews and, you know, on the forums how it goes.
Yeah, because...
Because
they changed the... Because they're using, this, I think, the same engine sort of like what they used for Children of the Nile, which was a lot different from the old Breakaway ones.
Exactly, and I really enjoyed the older style city builder games, you know, like Caesar 3, Caesar 2. So I'm just a bit hesitant about how Caesar 4 is going to play out, you know, especially under the new engine, like you say.
There's a lot of remakes of old games floating around these days. Have you thought about remaking any of those or one you'd like to see come back?
Yeah, there's a couple I'd like to see come back, actually. Colonization, and I know that's pretty big news at the moment. Everyone's wanting that one to come back. And I'm sure we'll see it one day soon. You know, like, with the amount of, you know, pressure from the community, I can't see how it couldn't be a hit. A few other old ones I'd love to see back. I don't know if anyone remembers it, but there was this old game on the Commodore 64 called Paperboy. And basically, it was an arcade game, and you'd ride up a street and dodge all these obstacles and have to deliver newspapers to all these houses. I really like the old games, you know. You know, like back on the Spectrum, there was this game called Tank Ticks, and it was basically two tanks facing each other and, you know, all these obstacles between the two tanks, and you'd have to work out your strength and wind speed and angle and everything to hit the opposing tanks. Wow.
Yeah,
that was a great game, actually.
A lot of online games
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah. And, of course, one of my all-time favorites, I'd love to see another imperialism game come out.
Okay. So, in conclusion, this interview will be part of our brand-new podcast. Were you familiar with the concept of podcasting, and what kind of podcast do you listen to yourself, if any? Any recommendations?
Yes, I know all about podcasting. You know, being in IT, it's very hard to not know what podcasting is. Really, I don't listen to that many podcasts at all. Probably the only one I regularly listen to is from a radio station down here, Fox FM, and that's Hamish and Andy. hamishandandy.com.au if you want to get their podcast.
Okay. I have to try that sometime.
But, yeah, they're just two comedians on the local, on one of Melbourne's biggest radio stations down here, and they do, like, drive time between 4 and 6 in the afternoon. So they're really good during peak hour.
Okay. Well, it was fun having the chance to interview you. Thank you for your time.
And, well,
I'll see you around.
See everyone on Apollon, I'm sure.
Yep.
Yes, 3 years ago today that we are recording this, the second episode of Polycast, in case you forgot what you were listening to. That happens to me, I think. Anyway, it was the release of the Cult of Power 2 source code from Activision. And Apollo got its first mention on BBC.
And
well,
it was
a website.
Rhythm
that's
with arrows.
At least we were named.
Yeah. I was quite disappointed, too, because I sent them a correction, and they never even replied. Bastards.
Bastards.
Did you tell them you knew me?
No, I neglected to mention
Here's
that.
Your problem.
I'm not sure if that.
Now you learn from your mistake.
Of a difference. If anything, it would have helped.
Now, with the Call to Power 2 source code, I never really played Call to Power. I think someone else has to expound on. I mean, it's a good thing that they released the source code. I mean, that in general sounds to be a very good.
Yes, it's pretty rare that a company releases all the source code.
If I
it's already pretty rare that Civ 4 released some of the source code.
Hmm. If I recall correctly, I think they stopped supporting the game though. So.
Yeah, they did that a month after release.
So I mean, you know, it's more of a we're sorry here, do what you want.
Yeah, something like that.
I remember reading more than one report, people even phoning tech support, and they're like, oh yeah, go to a poll.
Yeah, exactly. And their support page on Activision.com was basically, here's their website, go here. That was Apollodon, of course. Maybe the best thing about this is, if you ask me, I don't have direct evidence for this, but I think the fact that there was a SDK for Civ 4 was largely due to the fact that there was source code for Call to Power 2. So I guess even Imran and other people can be grateful for that.
I'm grateful, I'm grateful.
If you have any questions for us, you can send them to, what was it, Dan?
Polycast@apolton.net. That's polycast@apolton.net.
And if you really want to humor us, send us a voicemail, and we will play it on the air.
Reach us through our Skype account, the Polycast, by using Skype yourself. The call is free. Download Skype from Skype.com, SKYPE.com. You can also phone us if you prefer. In North America, call 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, call 44-20-7871-7659. That's 44-20-7871-POLY. No profanity or hate mail, please. Who was typing really loudly? Was that you, Wouter?
Nope, I'm doing nothing for a change.
Oh, it was probably me.
Oh, I see.
I was
drawing
actually
on the keyboard.
I was actually helping this site out by typing on the
form. Oh.
Yes, I was so bored I started to read off.
Oh.
Oh. Ouch. Burn.
And you want people to buy the Plus accounts?
Oh, well, this beats doing work, let me tell you.
But Wouter could be surfing prawn.
Yeah.
Taken to away.
Well, his microphone was already protesting. And I'm sure his nose was as well, so we took a break from that.
Don't want to get carpal tunnel. I'm all the quick.
I almost did a hot. No, no.
This is a family-friendly radio podcast. You should be ashamed.
At least it could have been.
Has the potential.
Well, folks, you made it. You made it to the end of another Polycast episode, unless you just happen to scroll all the way to the ending here, in which case perhaps something that I'm going to say is not going to make any sense, but that would be the way things usually are anyway. I've been joined by Locutus.
Hi, guys.
Actually, it would be Bye Guy now, but...
What?
It's okay. I know the multitasking with the prawn can get distracting. And Mackie.
Hi.
Mackie now has to go on, what is it, the second or third date with some of your fans out there? I don't know.
Ooh. What date? I don't got no date. Don't got no... Oh, that's great English.
And Imran.
Oh, yes, happy swimming as well. I have to come up with a catchphrase.
Record date October 28th, 2006. Edited by Daniel Thank You Quick. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization IV and the Warlords Expansion Pack. Copyright 2006, Bolton Civilization site at bolton.net.